I feel like a writer this week, sitting in a rustic cabin on a mountain, thinking about visibility and the art of the monologue. When I'm done recording this, I'll turn inward again, back to my novel revisions. But here in the moment, I am both writer and publisher, sitting in a rather crunchy chair, surrounded by wood paneling, wildfire smoke seeping through the cracks and searing my lungs. The world is burning. We are continuing to face a global pandemic, and I am alone with my words. I feel really small. That's part of why I started Forest Avenue Press, so I could help others get their stories out. I figured even if my words didn't have value, I could publish other people's books, help their words become part of the community conversation by printing them on 60-pound paper and binding them into the culturally relevant objects we call books. Books make words accessible. They're a kind of magic, often performed by a team of professionals out of view of the author and reader. Books can be joy makers too, like Ari Honavar's debut novel, A Girl Called Rumi. Deepak Chopra called it a magical journey to a world of mystical delights, enchantment, and revelation. I like to think of it as one of the texts that got me through 2020 as I grieved the loss of my best friend from COVID-19. In A Girl Called Rumi, there's trauma and despair, but storytelling and poetry surge through even the saddest parts, and it is these that help Kimia, the protagonist, when she returns to Iran and grapples with childhood memories. Here's Kimia talking about sneaking out of her house as a child. I didn't have much time. My mother wanted me home to help with dinner, but I made up a fib about a mandatory after-school rally. I wasn't sure whether it was the war, my Baba's absence, or that she'd been laid off from her teaching job for taking a photo with a deposed Shah, but my mother's ever-present temper flared with a new, raw severity. It was as if all the beauty she had depended on for her poetry was getting stripped away from her world. You see, poets are like flowers. Some bloom in the cold shade of despair. Others can't get enough of the bountiful gold of the sun, exposing both the wondrous and the wretched. My mother needed grounding beauty and light to nurture her, to give voice to her deepest, most guarded wounds. The regime had pruned her of her poetry. This passage resonated with me, especially last winter when my family and I huddled at home in constant togetherness while Trump and his cronies spun blatant lies about the election. During those dark, rainy months, I found myself asking, are you the kind of writer who needs grounding beauty and light? Or can you put joy on the page from this place of despair? The answer depended on the day, but I wouldn't have known to ask the question if Ari hadn't written that passage. She made her story into something real, a manuscript, and my team and I transformed that manuscript into a physical object, one that is on shelves in bookstores across the United States, visible in its message of hope. Speaking of visibility, I've thought a lot recently about invisible disabilities. Our culture here in the U.S. is programmed to think of someone who appears well as healthy. But so many of us, myself included, are carrying around challenges within our bodies. I'm curious about how the pandemic is reprogramming our societal response to illness and wellness, and whether we can emerge from the pandemic, whenever that happens, being kinder, more understanding, not just with others, but with ourselves. Before I signed my author, Rumi Zakoya, she told me of her diagnosis, terminal cancer. When her disease progressed and we realized she might not be here for her book launch in June 2020, the Forest Avenue team stepped up. Together we rushed it out in March, just as COVID-19 started shutting down our city. The Royal Abduls is about visibility and identity. I'm going to share a passage from the point of view of Omar, the protagonist's 11-year-old nephew, who's trying to figure out his place in the world. He lives with his family in Washington, D.C., and he's obsessed with India, as his father's parents are from there. Here he's arriving at cricket practice. At the field, Omar surveyed the group. Like last fall, there were two girls, Indian sisters, who were always dressed in impeccable cricket whites. About half the remaining dozen kids were also South Asian. His aunt had given him the term, which means from India, Pakistan, or Bangladesh, which all used to be one country, or Sri Lanka, which was Ceylon in most of his books. The rest were from all over, Zimbabwe, England, and Australia, plus four from the U.S., He felt weird about this because most of the kids were immigrants or the children of immigrants, and they assumed that he was too, but his parents had been born in America. He wanted to talk to his aunt about this to see if they were still immigrants, even though they had been born here, but he hadn't gotten around to it yet. I love Ramiz's novel because it's a story about being a second-generation American. It tackles racism and privilege and misguided expectations people form based on appearance. The characters in The Royal Abduls identify themselves as culturally Muslim, but they are not practicing the religion. They drink, they do not pray. Readers have called them out for not being Muslim enough, but it's this story Ramiza set out to tell, this story that mirrors her lived experience as someone with a Muslim name. This reaction tells me we need more books about Muslim families out there, practicing or not. Who we are as individuals is at the core of the third book I want to talk about today, Beth Kephart's memoir, Wife, Daughter, Self. Beth talks about the separation between the selves, how she is this and also this, and these pieces lead her back to herself in the third section. To continue with our theme, I'll share a passage about visibility from an essay titled Fixing Beauty. Thin was the thing that I'd become, not beauty. Thin was how I floated down the halls of my first post-college job. Thin was my defense against my poor fashion choices and my hair. Thin was, maybe, how the man who would become my husband noticed me. Or maybe he noticed how I listened. Or maybe how I loved how he drew better than anyone else ever could. Or how he sang or how he walked. But to write that this way would be to suggest that the man I loved somehow needed aggressive admiration, desired it. And to suggest such a thing would be to lie on the page, because my husband never did. He never would. He never has needed any version of admiration. He, in fact, disdains all admiration versions. Still, he married me, a beautiful Salvadoran man with a not beautiful American woman, a lifelong glare of a disparity that other women, especially, have seen. So much is going on in this one paragraph. I find Beth's sentences transcendent, her thought process refreshing and startling and always, always beautiful. In this passage, Beth starts with herself, how she's fixated on being thin in college, not for herself, but as a bulwark against other people's opinions. From there, she glides into thinking about her husband, and then it turns yet again to women seeing them together. As a reader discovering those words on the page, I am angry at those other women for judging Beth's appearance. I am aligned wholly with her as she muses about her visibility in the world and how others perceive her, and I want to call her on the phone right now and tell her how beautiful she is. And that's the thing about literature. Books let us inside a person's lived experience. We can be alone with someone else's inside voice. Isn't that amazing? A conversation might net one or two of these insights, or maybe all of them over the course of several conversations, but here in this whole one passage, we have the progression succinct and swift. Which brings me back to this cabin, this crunchy chair by a window I've closed to keep out the wildfire smoke. I'm here as a writer, but also as a publisher and a mother and someone with invisible disabilities. I am alone, but I don't feel lonely because I have brought these writer's words with me. Reading them, investigating my responses to them, how they land in my heart, has helped me understand myself better.